You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Maybe if we turn the right knobs, things will work better. Hi, folks. Welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are and wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. I want to welcome you, a very special welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you'll make a habit out of it. It's a really good habit to get into, and folks around the world in 95 countries have the habit. So you're in good company. A couple of quick announcements and then an observation or two. First of all the music that you hear on this show comes from independent artists. And I get most of that from GarageBand.com or from music.podshow.com. But some of the music that you hear is sent to us directly by the artist. And we invite you who are independent artists to do so. Don't forget about the seminar we have coming up. If you have any interest at all in how did we get here, then of course looking at all of the various theories about how we got here would be of interest to you. And one particular focus, one particular theory that we're going to look at in this seminar has to do with the story that is actually written in this document called Genesis. It's not the one you've heard. It's not the story that you've heard about creation. It is the story that is actually written in Genesis. No tricks, no sleight of hand, not on our part anyway. We're just going to look at what it actually says, and it'll blow your mind. So if you haven't registered for that, be sure you do, because we're racing toward the seminar date, March the 29th. Now, today I was doing what I do every day, and that is going through various news groups and various news services, looking for information having to do with UFOs, extraterrestrials, and anything else that might be strange and unexplained. And I noticed, although I've noticed this before, I've commented on it before, but it just struck me today, at the appalling lack of reports that are even available there in the mass media about UFOs, extraterrestrials, etc. I mean, it was like a blank. And what hit me was groups like MUFON and IPUS and other groups get reports of UFO sightings almost every day. And yet, there's not anything in the news about it. And occasionally, they run a story, and usually with a chuckle factor. But there's nothing about all of these UFO sightings that are happening each and every, well, if not every day, certainly every week, being reported to all these other groups, MUFON, IPUS, and others. And this thought hit me. You know why? It's because they don't know about them. And you know why they don't know about them? Because they would not pass a chance to chuckle at it. But the reason they don't know about them is because we no longer consider mass media relevant. People don't even report it to the newspaper, to the radio station, to the TV station anymore because of their long tradition of ridicule for anything that is UFO related. So we've just decided they're irrelevant. We're bypassing them. And we only go to mass media if we want the latest on Britney Spears or Obama's search for a new puppy. We'll be back with some real news right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, if you've been paying attention, if you've been watching the video, or if you looked at my website, then you know that my guest is Jeff Peckman. Jeff Peckman is the director of the Extra campaign, which is a ballot initiative in Denver related to extraterrestrial things. We'll get into that in just a moment. He's on the board of directors for Exopolitics Institute. He is on the advisory board of the Institute for the Study of Galactic Civilizations and a columnist for Examiner.com having to do with UFOs. His columns do. And Jeff, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted you're here.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me on the show.
Jeff, I think everyone is... I can't speak for everyone, but I think a lot of our audience would be very familiar with you. You've been in the news. You've been on Larry King Live. You've been on Letterman. I think CNN. But you've been on lots of news shows and talk shows, and I think people are very familiar with you and your initiative to get the federal government, and also to get the government in Denver to pay attention to extraterrestrial matters. We'll talk about that, but let's back up and let me ask you for a little bit of background about Jeff Peckman. How did you get interested in this whole topic of UFOs and extraterrestrials to the point that you would become sort of a political activist on the issue?
Well, I think it actually started on March 1st of 1954 when the United States exploded its biggest hydrogen bomb, and I was born the same day. So now I'm here basically addressing the same concerns that the extraterrestrial visitors apparently had when they had an alleged meeting with President Eisenhower just 9 days before that explosion. But more recently, it was only in about the last year that I heard a couple of lectures on this topic, and one was by Stan Romanek, who's a contactee and has the famous Alien in the Window video, and also his evidence, that was just a sliver of his evidence, and the rest of it was all, including that, was very convincing that there's something going on here that people should know about. Then the second lecture was John Schussler, who was a co-founder of MUFON and a former engineer with NASA. And he described the whole government cover-up with a lot of declassified documents. And so that was very convincing as well, and it seemed like the public should know about that. But he was convinced that this information would not be released by the federal government in his lifetime. And at that point, I just wanted to jump out of my chair and say, you know, hold on a second. We are the government. The people sitting right in this room, we are the government. And through a ballot initiative, which I knew how to do, we can get this information directly to the people, going over the heads of government officials, directly to the people, to the highest power of government, which is us, and just get the job done. So that was my start.
You know, referendum exists in some states. In some states, it doesn't. And it does not exist at the federal level. So how would you translate that effort into prying the information out of the federal government about UFOs and extraterrestrials? You could perhaps do something with a referendum in Colorado, but the federal government doesn't have referendums. So how would you do it?
That's correct. And that really is not the point of this ballot initiative. It was really meant to take the best available, credible evidence that is available in the private sector, not relying on government files at all, and bringing that to the people directly. And so it really doesn't matter what the federal government does. I was just speaking at the International UFO Congress. The new information, the new evidence there was just startling. And if people in the general public only had access to what's available within the private sector amongst the many people following this issue and who have been collecting evidence, that would be more than enough to convince everyone that, yes, there is this reality of extraterrestrial civilizations, there have been these interactions, there have been these visitations, there is physical evidence that exists. So but indirectly, it might prompt or compel the federal government to step in when they see that we're going over their heads and keeping, you know, they're not in the loop at that point. They may just say, hey, we have our story to tell too. And they might just finally start telling it when they see that we're just taking it into our own hands.
Well, you heard at the beginning of the show my comments about people, especially on anything having to do with serious situations, serious news. People are not looking to mass media. People have, by the boatloads, the majority of the people do not get their news from newspapers, radio, or television anymore. They consider that to be rather irrelevant. They're going to the internet. They're going to shows like this one. They're going to sites like yours. And so they've just written the news media off as irrelevant on this issue. And, of course, the news media's audience numbers, their Arbitron ratings, are in the basement and deserve to be. And they've worked hard to get there, and they should enjoy being there. But what happens when you have the masses who just sort of flip away the federal government on this issue and say, you guys are just irrelevant now?
I think that's a good thing to do. I think when you try to force them to do anything, it just bolsters their ego, and then they just are selecting between who's going to get them the most votes or the most campaign contributions. And I think that there comes a time when we just have to say, all right, you are our public servants. You've kind of forgotten that. You're not the masters of our destiny. You're our servants. This is something that you're not accomplishing. We'll do it ourselves. And I'm glad you started out talking about the mass media and also made reference to this examiner.com, because now there's about 10 different people writing articles about, you know, very serious articles. Dr. Michael Sala was on your show last week. He's
yes.
One of the people writing for examiner.com. I am. There's a few other people. And if you look at Google News and you do a search on UFO, you'll see at least half of the articles on the first page are from examiner.com writers. And out of the 20 articles I've written, almost all of them have jumped right to number one or two ranking in relevance out of 3,000 to 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 articles on any given day. So there's an interesting phenomena going on right here, and that is that we're sort of becoming a grassroots mainstream media in our own way, and people are paying attention, and that's filtering into other places, and we're essentially starting to dominate that discussion with very serious UFO articles, exopolitics, government cover-up, that sort of thing, and it's registering as news, not just blog entries. So this is one thing that we're doing. It's working.
Well, let me sort of wax philosophical a little bit here. We don't live in the same world that existed 10 years ago. We don't live in the same world that existed 5 years ago. And we live in a world where the virtual world of the internet has become an integral part of everyday life. Now, in the virtual world, the triggers that cause us to take some action are different than the triggers out in in the real world. And I won't get into all of that, but the psychological triggers that cause us to click something and say, yeah, all right, I'll do that, it's different in the virtual world. Now, the people that have learned that have prospered, and the people who still are living the illusion that they're living in the world of, 1990, they're failing. And, the best evidence of this, and there's a reason I'm bringing this up, the best evidence of this is the guy who used the internet more effectively than anyone else running for president won. He raised more money, and he got more votes. And he himself says that, the major factor was being able to get his ideas to people via the internet. And they knew how to do it, they knew what the triggers were, and they lined them up and pulled them. Now, the reason I bring that up is because you have suggested that the federal government, I don't know if you've actually done this yet, but you propose sending a petition to President Obama to set up a federal commission on extraterrestrial affairs. Now, has that actually been done, or is that in process?
No, this was... It wasn't a petition. I have proposed a White House Extraterrestrial Affairs Commission by way of applying for a job with the Obama administration last November, and anybody that did that would come to a section where you can apply for a different agency or department, and there's a blank space there that says if the agency or department that you want to apply for is not listed here, then please enter what you are applying for. So I said, well, I'm applying for the project coordinator for the White House Commission on Extraterrestrial Affairs, and this is why there should be one and why I should help organize it. So that's how that happened, and a few other people applied as well. But, that was just to toy with that a little bit and see if anything might happen from it. But I think the real way that this is going to be accomplished is through one or more ballot initiatives at a local level that, again, will get the information directly to the people. And one of the other tools that we'll be using is what's going to be called or regarded as a citizen's UFO extraterrestrial briefing document. And this is something that can be, 8 or 12 pages in a newsprint tabloid, 11 by 17-inch pages. You can put a lot of important information in that, and it costs less than 10 cents a piece to print. Volunteers can deliver that house to house, meeting people on their own turf, person to person, and at that grassroots level, that's where this information, I think, will be conveyed much more effectively and honestly in a way that people on the receiving end will trust and appreciate and deliberate on very thoughtfully, because they're going to have to vote on it. So I think that's going to totally change the dynamic of this discussion and take the emphasis off federal government releasing files, because what do they have anymore? I mean, we know they've shifted things to the private sector, to the corporations, they've destroyed things. What's left in the X-Files anyway? There may be something. But I do believe that at this grassroots level, and this is what the members of Congress have told Dr. Stephen Greer and his group, that they're kind of stuck in what they do in Congress, just because of the way things work or don't work. And so they said, this really has to be a grassroots effort for this to happen. And that's what we're trying to do.
All right, let me play the devil's advocate for a moment. At this point, 27 states have declared sovereignty. I don't know if you're aware of that. And have served notice on the federal government of the same, that they have declared sovereignty, and that the federal government is not their master. The states are the masters of the federal government. 27 states. There may be more now, but the last time I checked was a couple of weeks ago. 27 states now have done that. More of them have such resolutions before their state legislature, and so one could expect there will be more of them that do it. It doesn't seem to have made any difference whatsoever to the bureaucrats nor to the elected officials in Washington, D.C. It seems to have made no impact upon them whatsoever, having been served notice, by golly, you work for us. So why would we expect that a grassroots referendum, as you're proposing, would have an impact on Washington?
Well, again, that's not the intention. Whether it does or does not have an impact really doesn't matter what the federal government does, because this task can be accomplished at the grassroots level, person to person, from different cities. There's now two or three cities, major cities in the U.S., that are on the verge of launching one of these ballot initiatives to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission. And if it happens in any one city, it's going to be a huge impact on the population. Now, again, it doesn't matter what Congress or the White House does. They can live in some illusion, some illusory world. It really doesn't matter. But person to person, what I've observed in these ballot initiatives is that when you take it's like putting a person in a jury. A ballot initiative is like a case in the court of public opinion. People argue both sides, but the voters are both the judge and the jury. And when you put them in that situation, in this case as a lawmaker, then they rise to a higher level of responsibility and they take it seriously, and they will deliberate much more thoughtfully on a particular issue than our elected representatives do when they pass a bill in Congress. Most of them never read, you know, anything. They just rely on other people to tell them how to vote. And so, again, person to person, this is a discussion that can take place. And one very interesting thing that happens, Kevin, is that classrooms in Denver and these other cities and around the country will pick an unusual ballot initiative, and they'll hold a mock election as part of their social studies or political science class. They'll debate both sides. They'll dig into it. It's their homework. They have to get a passing grade, and so they dig very much into this. They really become expert in the discussion of this issue. And that in itself brings a lot of this information that the general public is normally denied by the government or mass media, as you've said. It brings it right into the classroom, right into the families, right around the kitchen table, at the water cooler in businesses. And it really does become the talk of town. And I've been through this twice with other initiatives, and it really was the talk of the town and the talk of the nation. And it caught the attention and the imagination of people, kind of like, well, what if, you know? And as lawmakers then, they're the ones that make the decision, and that's where the dynamic changes. Really, it doesn't matter what happens in Washington, D.C.
Well, I'm glad you stated that again, because I think a lot of folks in Washington, D.C. listen to this show. A lot of government agencies listen to this show. And I think they need to understand that they have run themselves right up to the cliff with their attitudes and their policies about UFOs and extraterrestrial information. They've run themselves right up to the edge of the cliff of irrelevancy. And once they become irrelevant in the minds of the people, they've lost all possibility of control of the information. And then everything comes out eventually, everything. We have a break coming up here in just less than a minute. And what I would like to do when we come back from this break is talk about this initiative specifically that you have for Denver, what it entails, what you envision the commission actually doing if this referendum passes. And then what should we expect as the result of that? What kind of information can we expect that we're going to see? What benefit would we get from having that commission? And if the one in Denver passes, it would be, I think, the very first one in all the United States of America. And we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. All right, folks, we'll be back with Jeff Peckman right after this. Welcome back to the show. My guest this evening is Jeff Peckman, and Jeff, before we went away for break, I said that what I wanted us to do when we came back was to explore this initiative that you had going for Denver. Now, it's my understanding that you've called it off temporarily.
That's correct.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a moment. But what does this call upon Denver to do?
It would establish a commission of seven people, and this is a ballot initiative versus a referendum. A referendum is something, an issue that's put to the voters by the legislative bodies. A citizen's initiative is something that the citizens put on the ballot for the voters. So let's talk about it as a ballot initiative. And there are probably 10,000 cities and counties in this country that have ballot initiatives. And this would be one where we would collect the signatures, put it on the ballot, and it would require the city to set up a commission of seven people. And those seven people would primarily be a body that would be responsible for briefing the public on this topic of extraterrestrial UFOs, visitors, civilizations from, you know, outer space and their interactions with human beings and why that matters. They would explain why that matters to the general public. They would try to evaluate the risks and benefits of interacting with extraterrestrial civilizations who are visiting Earth. They would try to help ensure that the different departments of government are properly prepared in case there is some incident that is an issue related to health or safety or security, whether it's a crash or, you know, anything like that. But also the benefits, you know, what can we gain from interacting culturally, scientifically, educationally, in terms of technology, economic development, trade, any of those things. It's a way to start bridging the gap between what the reality is and what the citizens have been led to believe for so many decades. So the task is really pretty simple, to gather the best available, credible evidence and to make that available to the public, and then just to kind of keep the discussion going. Beyond that, you know, to start asking the kinds of questions that need to be asked. And I would not take it upon myself to, you know, pretend that I know all those questions. But we know that many questions do need to be asked. And so that's really the gist of it. Seven people, and what I changed, one reason it was delayed was that we started over when it was clear that some things needed to be changed in the text to eliminate the requirement of city employees from being on the commission. So those four positions out of 11 were eliminated. Now it's only seven. And the bar was raised very high so that each of those seven people, really, they're not just volunteers out of curiosity, but they do have a background that means they're an expert in this field. They've been in a lot of crash retrievals. They've talked with hundreds of people who have, you know, alleged to have had close encounters with vehicles or extraterrestrial beings. They've written books, white papers, you know, people that are very credible, have degrees, medical doctors, you know, people with a lot of knowledge and experience in this field, so that the citizens of Denver can get the most benefit from this commission. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Okay, how would these seven be selected? Would they be, once this passes, would there then be an election to get these seven people, or would they be appointed by the mayor, or how would they come into being?
They would, you know, word would get around, and they could apply, and then they would be selected by the mayor, ultimately.
Okay. Doesn't this run the risk that if you've got a mayor that is an ostrich, and I'm not saying that the mayor of Denver is an ostrich. I'm saying if you have a mayor that is an ostrich, got his head in the sand on this issue, that he might select the silliest people that he could find on the list.
Well, the requirements are such that, for example, there needs to be one expert with a PhD in the natural sciences, physics, astronomy, meteorology, or biology. All of them need to have had some exposure to this topic. A medical doctor who has published a published author with expertise on the UFO extraterrestrial topic, one expert with at least 5 years' experience in investigations of UFO extraterrestrial encounters, and so on like that. So if there are those people, we can't absolutely guarantee the best outcome in any scenario, but we've tried to narrow down or kind of limit any kind of foolishness that might go on by really identifying some very specific requirements, credentials of this group of people. And fortunately, we do happen to have a very very smart, very enlightened mayor, Mayor John Hickenlooper. And so, at least for now, we're in pretty good shape.
All right. Now, you called off the initiative. Are you going to restart it?
Very glad you asked. Yes. That will probably happen between now and the X conference in the D.C. area in mid-April, where I'll talk about some of this as well. And I'm rounding up two or three other champions in a few other major cities that are also very excited about this, because I talked about it at the UFO Congress recently in Laughlin, Nevada. And, you know, back in the early 80s, there was one county, Santa Clara County, started a nuclear freeze initiative, something like that. And within 2 years, there were 200 cities and towns around the country and millions of people voting on this issue all around the U.S. Mm-hmm. So we've gone from one last year to probably two or three or four coming up in the next month. And along with that, we have these examiner.com columns that only started last April. So in a sense, you know, the two big obstacles in history that have been in our way for the disclosure of this information has been the government and the mass media. Well, now we're clear on the idea that we are the government. John Madison stated that the people are the only legitimate fountain of power, and then all the powers of government come from that. And this right to petition the government is guaranteed in the First Amendment. So we are the government, and we can do this. And so now we're also the media. So we have both those things covered. And if disclosure does not happen this year, it's really because we chose not to do it, not because Obama or Congress just kept dragging their feet. But we do have this power to get this done. So I'm confident we will, but, you know, we just take a step at a time and go forward.
All right. Now, assuming that let's just move forward in time. And let's hypothetically say that this has been on the ballot and it was voted in by the people. So now there's a commission, we'll go far enough in time to say that the seven people have been selected now. What will be the source of the information that they are going to disseminate to the public? Where will they get the information?
Well, Kevin, I think that's going to be somewhat of a free-for-all. we can certainly, from my side and from the people that are have already offered to be on the commission that are ready to go, people like Dr. Stephen Greer or Alfred Rubber or Michael Sala, at least at a distance. And by the way, the requirement does not, the initiative does not require that the seven commission members actually live and work in Denver. They can be, actually it's stated, they can be from anywhere in the universe. So you never know who might show up. But once they actually start operating there, if they take this responsibility seriously, then they will have no problem, you know, just sorting through their emails and their mail and saying, oh, you know, people are sending us tons of stuff. Now let's see where this comes from. And of course, there'll be, you know, it goes without saying that people will be curious as to what references they're using, where they're getting their information, and if it just gets in some totally wrong direction, I'm sure that will be self-correcting, because a lot of people will be paying attention. This will be a first-time event, and people that care, you know, there will be debates, and there will be, the government might step in and say, oh, no, this is all false, and, you know, whatever, you know, or you can't talk about this. At this point, it's too soon. It's premature to predict exactly what might happen. But if it does pass, I believe that there will be a responsible group of people that assembles and makes a good faith effort to do justice to that task.
All right. Now, perhaps the toughest question of all, what chances, what percentage of chance do you think this ballot initiative has of passing?
At this point, I'd say at least a third. And the reason I say that is I think most people know this quote by Schopenhauer about, you know, every new idea goes through three stages. You know, first it's ignored, and then it's possibly opposed, and then it's accepted as self-evident. And in the previous ballot initiative, I observed that when I thought I'd have to kind of move everybody through those three stages to really make any progress, what I actually observed was that the whole population on just about any given topic is already divided pretty much evenly. There's about a third of the people that will say, oh yeah, UFOs, sure, they've been here, I know that, and I've known that all my life. The middle third will be, you know, outraged, and the other third won't care. So it will be the challenge to move enough of those people into that later group where it's an obvious thing, such that it does pass. But, you know, Kevin, by the time it actually comes to the election, there will have been so much education of the public that in the end it may not matter so much. They will have already heard a lot of the stuff that they might hear from the commission once the commission's formed. They'll hear about it in the classroom, at work, in the media, on the internet, in these citizens' briefing documents. Denver will be fairly well saturated with a lot of information, enough that it'll be very obvious. There'll still be a role for the commission at that point, but much of the intention would have already been fulfilled just by having this campaign of education over many months. So, you know, we'll just have to see. I'm optimistic, I should say, because of just the nature of the time that we're in and the kinds of shows that you do and you know, other shows and these columns. And, you know, it's just in the air. Edgar Mitchell coming out with this. There's just so much more information coming out, many more articles than any year in the past. I think 40% of all the articles that Stephen Bassett of Paradigm Research Group has cataloged, 40% of those happened in just 2008 compared to the previous 6 years. So there's really an escalation of all this information reaching the public anyway. More sightings, you know, it's just a very exciting time. So I think on a trajectory, we could actually, this could pass in November of this year.
What about funding for this commission? It would seem to me in the current economic climate, this might be something where people say, yeah, I think it's a good idea, but we just can't afford this.
Right. Well, it's very specifically written into the proposed ordinance that this would be funded only by gifts, grants, and donations, and specifically not from the city budget.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. And we'll continue talking with Jeff Peckman on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Jeff Peckman. Now, Jeff, when we went away for break, we just brought up the whole idea of funding. And you said that written into the language of this ballot initiative is specific language that says basically there will be no tax money used for this. It has to come from private sources. And do you suspect that such private sources would be forthcoming with the bucks?
Yes, let me mention a few things. You know that Paul Allen has been funding SETI, Search for Intelligent Life, out in space for a while. Google founders have partnered up with somebody to do the same thing. Robert Bigelow has just started funding MUFON. They're not called strike teams, they're called star teams, to go out and arrive first at a, you know, whatever incident is that might be UFO or extraterrestrial related. Richard Branson, owner of Virgin Airlines is now building Virgin Galactic Spaceport in New Mexico. And even Philip Anschutz, the billionaire who owns Examiner.com, is indirectly, or at least maybe unknowingly, funding people writing these Examiner.com columns with all this incredible information coming out. So I think it's just a new wave. There's a pattern already being established that, you know, this is the new economy. I mean, if we really want to build up Earth's economy, we're going to have to start thinking beyond Earth. Just as to build up U.S. economy, you got to think beyond the borders of our country. So I do see a pattern of support for this kind of thing. People are stepping forward that with the money that might have been shy to do it before. And so I think it looks very promising. I mean, you know, the implications of having this first commission and the kind of information that can be shared with the public through that commission is I think, going to be very inspiring to the people that have the resources and are, you know, visionaries themselves.
One of the realities, Jeff, of political things in the United States, unfortunately, but it is a reality, in the massively mentally degenerated times in which we live, is that rather than examining the issues and taking on the concepts and ideas, based on their merits, very often what happens is, and especially with the mass media, is they go for the tabloid character assassinations. And, this guy is, he's loony, he's nutty, ha, ha, ha. If you haven't yet, you will be subjected to this. Are you aware of that?
Well, I've been subjected, I've had a lot of media interviews, and overall I've seen a pattern of much more respect than a lot of other people expected. And I've been warned, I was warned and urged not to do the Letterman show and not to do a local show here in Denver with a guy who sometimes sits in for Rush Limbaugh. And so I've been warned about this, but my task is simple. I show up where I'm invited, I speak the truth as I know it, and I'm not attached to the results. And I've found over and over again that the media tends to start actually defending me against critics more than ridiculing me. In the very, very beginning, yes, there's more of that. But over time, they saw that, I'm a decent guy to talk to, and, I have a sense of humor, and they like that, and, I don't get rattled by all these people that are going crazy, over this thing. And I'm very genuine. And so, overall, I would say, yeah, it's been very, very favorable, and I've been very pleased with the media response. And I think that it's a different time now.
I hope that continues. The thing that the thing that I sort of see on the horizon, and I hope I'm wrong about this, is that as this thing gains legs, and it looks like it might win, that's when you can expect the mass media bosses to come out in force with the nonsense. I mean, they even tried it. And look, I am totally apolitical, but they tried this during the presidential campaigns, and both Obama and McCain, to their credit, shut them down and said, "Look, that's not the candidate. That's family." On both sides of the fence, the media tried it. And it took the candidates saying, "I'm not going to talk about that. That has nothing to do with the campaign." So I think that the media, they're not going to give up their evil ways so easily. And I think that, this is a political issue, or it will be. It will become a political issue in Denver. And I think as it gains legs, that may be when the media bosses step in and start the nonsense.
Well, you're right, and you're justified in having that perception of it. I do believe that the opposite will occur in Denver because of the way that this will be conducted with the citizens' briefing document. Everybody's going to have this piece of paper, this well, it'll be sort of a tabloid, but a newspaper, mm-hmm. and it'll have people like Edgar Mitchell, very respected political leaders, people who actually are respected and you know, not just mistrusted. Mm-hmm. There will be celebrities, there'll be scientists, there'll be people, and they will, they'll be making very reasonable statements. So if a news reporter goes on the air putting a tinfoil hat on his head and making fun of the thing, they're going to be the ones that look bad. And I've already seen this from last year, a couple interviews that I did. And the comments about the interview afterwards were totally trashing the interviewer and basically defending me. I mean, they were harsh. things I couldn't even repeat on the air. So it'll be interesting. You know, it's always an experiment. But
so you're up for the rough ride if it happens, huh? You're up for the rough ride if it happens?
Yeah. And I already sort of have a reputation locally that I don't take things personally, even when they get personal, because I'm just conveying a message.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's good, and I think it's absolutely a wonderful thing that someone with your demeanor has stepped forward to take on this issue. And I think it's, it's a novel approach. I'm not aware that this sort of thing has been done anywhere before. Ballot initiatives, yes, but on this subject, on this topic, I'm not aware of this being tried anywhere. And sounds like you've got it together really well. We've got 2 minutes, a little less than 2 minutes, before we take our top of the hour break here. And what I'd like to do is get you to talk just a little bit about what do you do, how do you get folks' minds changed, the ones who say, oh, look, I've already read the Condon Report, I know about this already. So we don't need a commission. This has already been studied. How do you get that perception changed?
I think you have to enable them to relate this information to their daily life. Are they losing their job or losing their house because of an economy that's impacted by billions and hundreds of billions of dollars being siphoned out for UFO, extraterrestrial-related kinds of projects, as Michael Sala has written a lot about in his book? Do their children, do they like the idea of exploring space and would like to know more? I mean, this is going to be a very personal decision. It can't be dictated by any government at any level to any person. They're just going to have to, reflect on that. And I think that they will, in a very serious way, when they vote on it, and when they have information at hand that, when the evidence becomes overwhelming, then they're just going to say, well, I guess it's true. Mm-hmm. Well, what do we do about it? How can I benefit from this? How can my community benefit? What's this going to mean to my children? Are they going to be, the next generation going into outer space? That's pretty cool, They'd like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd just be a very human emotion and human, thinking about this whole situation that will turn the tide for them. It won't be flyers and ads and, campaign promises and rules and regulations. It'll just be, I think the time will be right, and they'll think about it, they'll consider it, and then they'll vote, they'll make the decision, and then what happens, happens.
Well, I tell you, I think one of the things that it really has going for it in terms of sort of getting those marginal votes, the ones that say, I don't know, I think one of the things that's really got going for it is that it's not going to cost them. This isn't coming out of their pocket. And so, okay, why not? Even if they're not really personally involved and engaged in the UFO extraterrestrial issues, I think some of those fence sitters will fall off on your side of the fence because of the fact that it's not going to cost anything. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to open up the telephone lines for you so you can call Jeff Peckman and ask him your questions and make your comments. We'll be back. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jeff Peckman. Let me just remind, especially those of you who are new to the show, this is your first time, or maybe first or second time that you've listened to the show. If you look at my website, you'll see that there is a photograph of Jeff Peckman on the website, kevinsmithshow.com. If you click his photograph, it will take you to his website. All right, Jeff, what I'd like for us to do is open up the telephone lines and allow people to call in and ask their questions or make their comments. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 602-539-9580. Now, if it would be a long-distance call for you, and you have to pay for that, use our toll-free number. It is 1-888-223-4599. Again, 888-223-4599. That's toll-free. If you live outside of the United States and you live outside of Canada, you can, if you want, use our flash message feature. Again, go to my website and kevinsmithshow.com, and then just scroll down. You will see a link that says flash message. It's in green. You'll see it, and you can use that. We'll read your question or comments on the air. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
And hello there, Jeff.
Hello, Kevin.
Yes, I want to know, have you ever followed any of the works of Zechariah Sitchin?
I've just a little bit. I've only had a small amount of exposure, but I basically know the history of that.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that I have to venture, especially since I would guess maybe around 1994. This is just my personal opinion, but a lot of the UFOs that we're seeing nowadays, I think most of them are Anunnaki. I think the Greys kind of left here by around 1994 from a lot of the sources I've heard of. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are that this ballot initiative will bring a lot of that to the table, and then in the context of a lot of discussion by old-timers, new-timers, you know, people very knowledgeable, people very new to the issue, a lot of this will be surfaced and discussed. But I'm really not an expert in that kind of information. My job, my task from the very beginning was not to bring some new information to the public, but to help everybody that had a lot of knowledge to get their messages to the masses. So that's my role.
Jeff, also, you also made quite a bit of news last year about showing some video footage of an alien. What came about with that?
What was the last part of your question?
What came about with that? There was something about, I think was it you last year that were coming out with
yes, that was the video that Stan Romanek took of an alleged extraterrestrial or some kind of non-human entity looking in his window, his living room window, and ABC knew, ABC is planning to do about a one-hour special on the Stan Romanek case in the coming months, and they have they have the rights to show that video for a limited amount of time, so we'll just see if that really transpires, you know, anytime in the next 2, 3, 4 months.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Kevin, thank you for the call. The telephone number, again, folks, is 602-539-9580, or if that would be, if that cost you long distance fees, use our toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Also, if you're outside the USA, you're outside of Canada, you can use the You can use the flash message feature on our website. Jeff, when that video came out, and I knew this would happen, but when that video came out, all of a sudden, you know, they were all, it's like harpies. They're on it. And there are people saying, oh, this is a fraud, this is a fake, it's a puppet, it's, you know. How did you handle, and how do you handle, those kind of criticisms? What do you say to that?
Well, yes, you're right, that was expected. And the best we can do is let people know that at some point that will be shown to more people. There have been a couple public meetings, and that press conference was really meant to satisfy the request of a handful of local reporters who had asked me about evidence that I had seen, and quite intensely asking.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to see that video, and I said, all right, I'll ask Stan Romanek if he'd be willing to show it, and he agreed. And then the media itself built it up into this huge thing, you know, Jeff Peckman has proof of extraterrestrial invasion or something like that. And, of course, it just got to be so huge that it was surreal. But it's okay because, you know, the message did get out. That story broke page view records at denverpost.com. It was all over, as you know, all over the Internet and other news. So over time, truth will prevail. People will see that and other videos and other evidence. And it's important that nobody put all the weight on any single piece of evidence, whether it's Stan Romanek's case, Billy Meyer's case, Betty and Barney Hill, because like any ecosystem, the strength of this evidence is in its diversity, biological diversity for an ecosystem and diversity of evidence for this reality. Because any case that's really strong, you know, they're going to attack it. People who don't want the information to get out will attack it. Others will support it. But over time, I believe that truth will prevail. People will see that. Whatever is the truth of that video will come out. But in the meantime, other kinds of evidence will come out from many other sources as well. And it'll just keep growing and growing until it'll reach a critical mass where, for the most part, people just say, well, you know, I guess there's something to this. Now let's get back to work or take advantage of this new information and see how it can improve our lives.
Are you familiar with the term couch potatoes?
Yes. On occasion, I'm a futon rutabaga. Yes.
One of the biggest enemies of progress and one of the biggest enemies of the truth is the couch potato syndrome. Now, I'll give you an example. We have hundreds of thousands of people listening to this show, all cocooned in their couch potato spectator gear. They love to hear it. They want to hear it. But if you ask them to do anything towards making it a reality, they're not going to do it. Out of a couple of million folks a day that some are listening and watching live to this show, others, because of their time zone, because this is audience all over the world, because of their time zone, what they do is they click on watch the latest show or listen to the latest show, and they do that tomorrow, okay? But a couple of million folks. The percentage of people who would even have the guts to send a flash message or to pick up a telephone and just talk with you about this is very, very small. And then you're fighting that whenever you're trying to get people to go out and vote on this. How do you get them off of their couch potato or out of their couch potato cocoon to go cast a vote when, you know, that's the normal run-of-the-mill way of life for, especially here in America, couch potatoes rule.
That's true, but people do vote. They treasure their vote. It's something that gives them a lot of, it empowers them,
mm-hmm.
and they like to exercise that power, and sometimes more than other times. But I think when you have a topic like this, you know, imagine if the people had to vote whether or not to send Americans to the moon. You know, just thinking about that, it kind of expands your mind. Gosh, you know, could you really go to the moon? I've always liked the moon. I'd want to go there myself. And so, sure, why not? It's like you said before. They say, why not? They've put a little check mark on a mail-in ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to be at the ballot machines anyway, and this is just one more issue that, you know, in addition to a few candidates or something else. So they check that. So that's the value of a ballot initiative, is that it engages the public in a way that very few other things do. You can send all kinds of information their way. It can go right past them. It's competing with TV shows and, you know, kids running around and other stresses of daily life. But when you send them a ballot, then all of a sudden it just seems almost magical that, you know, that's their power in this country. They are that highest source of power. And I've observed that they exercise that power. And it's okay with me if they vote against it, as long as they're taking a look at that information and making a decision. The act of making a decision is an act. It's a deliberate intent that I think collectively has a very big impact on what's going on in a community. So that's really the key, not just to give them information, but to put them in the position of making a decision.
You said earlier that you had gone online and filled out this online form where you can apply for a position in the Obama administration, and that you suggested a commission on extraterrestrial affairs, and that you wanted to kind of be the point man on that. You wanted to head that up. So let's do a hypothetical. We'll say that tomorrow or next week, sometime soon, the telephone rings and the voice on the other end of the line says, Jeff Peckman, this is Barack Obama. And it's come to my attention that you would like to head a commission in my administration, a commission on extraterrestrial affairs. I'd like for you to fly to Washington and let's talk about this. All right. What would you then, in that meeting with President Obama, say to him? What would you suggest to him that needs to happen with that commission as opposed to the one in Denver?
I would suggest that he take a look at the commission in Denver and form something similar at the federal level. And I would suggest names of people that I think would be good for him to talk to. I'm not the ultimate expert on this whole topic, but I would certainly encourage him to, you know, get in touch with a dozen different people that I've become acquainted with who are extremely knowledgeable, people that I know he would trust and respect, people like Dr. Edgar Mitchell, people like Paul Hellyer up in Canada. You know, these people who have been in government, they know politics, they know how to get things done, they're knowledgeable, they have very good credentials. And, you know, I would just sort of jumpstart it in that way.
All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Kevin calling from Northern Alberta. How are you tonight?
I'm well.
Well, that's good. How about you, Steve? Or
No, I'm Jeff. Hello, Kevin.
Jeff, yeah. Sorry, I was reading the wrong article here. I was reading your mission statement, and it's... You know, it sounds pretty decent. Unfortunately, we've had some encounters with ETs that haven't been quite so pleasant. What happens if this commission goes through and, you know, this is all hypothetical, and they come down to Earth and they try to take away our freedoms and our liberties? Will people be pointing the finger at you if such a thing happens?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the commission, part of their responsibility would to try to help assess the risks and the benefits of interacting with extraterrestrial beings. So it's implied in that there could be some downside to this whole thing. And how should we be prepared? As far as security of our population, fortunately, that's in the hands of other people. And I don't think that it's going to... You know, there have been a lot of people who have shared information, and within the people that discuss this topic, there isn't 100% agreement on all aspects of it, but it's important, I think, to get it out for discussion, get it out in the open, get it into the light, so that light of masses of people thinking about this will produce the truth out of the whole situation. And if part of that truth is that we need to be prepared to protect ourselves against malevolent intentions from other civilizations and other galaxies, well, that's just something else that goes in the hopper. We have to think about it, just as we have to think about that with any country that we do business with or we want to establish diplomatic relations with. So it'll just be an expansion of what we do already.
Okay, wonderful, and thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. The telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580, or toll-free at 1-888-223-4599. And also the flash messages, if you're outside of the USA, you're outside of Canada, then you can send me a flash message, and I will read your comment or your question, and we'll get Jeff to respond to it. The way you send a flash message is go to my website, scroll down. You'll see it in green letters. It says flash message. That's your first clue. You click that, and it'll open up what you need to send me a flash message. Jeff, one of the things that, we always hear about, well, what if these aliens are malevolent? And I think we do need to consider that, and I think there is some evidence that some of them may be. But, and the idea that they want to take away our freedoms and liberties. But, you know, freedom and liberty is much more imperiled by two people in the country, two types of people. One, those that we elect, and two, the couch potatoes. Those two groups pose more of a danger to freedom and liberty than outside forces, I think. I could be wrong about that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah, Chris, speak up for us.
All right. I'm really trying not to be like a cynic here, guys, but
okay.
I'm just trying to actually understand. I know that the mobilization and information and getting people to take note of these things is a good thing, but in the age that we live in right now, with information being so readily available on the web and things, it seems like people do have access to a lot more information than what we were given a long time ago. But it seems like the actual act of disclosure or the smoking gun or the ultimate the achievement of this agenda is like concrete evidence of proof of some kind to get people to say, hey, okay, obviously we do have a situation here, be it good or bad, now we need to address it. How do we go about getting the evidence? That's the thing I think is...
Well, I'm of the opinion the smoking guns...
A lot of stuff in front of us, but unless we can taste it, touch it, smell it, feel it, it's hard for anybody to really wrap their head around something. And I'll just take the answer off the air.
Okay, don't leave yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm of the opinion the smoking guns have long existed. How about a recording of an astronaut saying to Mission Control in Houston, we still have the alien spacecraft under... observation.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that, Kevin, and I understand that, but I guess for myself, being kind of somebody that's in that, interested in those kind of things, I've seen those, I've heard them, but as far as the layperson, they're like, hey, anybody can do something on Photoshop, anybody can fake recordings, and, you know, there's more of a skeptic built into people on the outside, and I think that the goal is to get people who aren't already interested in it to want to have an interest in it, to get them to vote on an initiative like this. How do you get them past all
that? Yeah. How do you activate the couch potatoes?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Thanks for the call.
All right, thanks.
I don't know. What do you think about that, Jeff? Do you think that perhaps the smoking guns are already out there? And that, I mean, here's what I say. I say the debate over whether UFOs are real is a dead debate. It's been dead for years. you have an official statement from the U.S. government saying that they're real. It's called Project Blue Book. By admitting that there were some they could not explain, they admitted that unidentified flying objects are real. What do you think about that?
Right, right. And I also agree with that and with Chris. There's going to be an increasing amount of the kind of physical evidence that many people will want to see. There will be a lot of people who will say, I don't really need to see a piece of spacecraft. I mean, it's obvious that if you got all these astronauts and military people and whistleblowers showing pictures and telling their stories, sure, I believe these people. They seem credible to me. Now, how does it benefit me to believe that? What do I do with that information? So there's, you know, getting people to believe it and then giving people a reason to want to know about it. And I think all of those things are going to just be growing effort. And over time, we'll see that critical masses will be reached in different, you know, in different ways. Again, probably one of the things I think surprised a lot of the local media here was from last year, showing this alien video and the whole campaign. They would put polls for their readers on their internet and in the newspaper, and consistently across the board in every newspaper, the number of people that believe that we've been visited by extraterrestrial intelligent life forms was up in the 70% area. You know, and I think that shocked a lot of these reporters. And when they saw that, I think that helped to just create more respectful reporting, because they saw, you know, the majority of our readers responding to this are in agreement. Yeah, this is for real. And so, you know, there'll just be more good videos and photos of extraterrestrial UFOs. There'll be more physical evidence over time. Everybody has their own pace and point at which they accept this reality. And ultimately, it doesn't matter if everybody accepts it or not. Those couch potatoes, mm-hmm. a lot of them in, you know, some years down the road are going to be benefiting from extraterrestrial technologies, whether they know it or not.
You know, and maybe already are.
Now they have a better, cleaner energy system. Doesn't matter where it comes from. You know, they want the benefit.
All right, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hello. How's it going today?
Good.
Excellent.
I've been doing some interesting research lately on just YouTube videos. Probably pulled up about 15 or 20 different things, and been listening to the show and go to the K-Files e-zine and click on some of the links. And I found a lot of interesting stuff, but one of the hard things that I've noticed when you try to tell other people about the show or anything that's going on is that they seem to be really content in being ignorant to all of it, knowing that there's probably a lot going on, kind of like it with an ignorance with bliss syndrome. Have you encountered that at all?
Sure, but it's okay, because the people that, in any given topic, there are going to be people that sort of champion the cause.
Jeff, we have to take a break. I'll let you answer that when we come back. Bob, thanks for the call. Always interesting. Folks, we'll be back right after this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Jeff, I had to cut you off just as you started to answer Bob's question. So let me give you the floor.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, you know, there's another saying that there are those that make things happen, those that watch things happen, those that don't know what happened, and there's probably a handful that try to keep things from happening. But things keep happening. And even if somebody's not actively promoting this issue and making disclosure happen, they're probably making something else happen. You know, good education in their communities or food so that we can all eat. So this is, you know, not for everybody. There will be those that try to want to take the lead in moving this issue forward, And that's okay, but everybody should just feel comfortable making their contribution. It's enough just to be helpful in some way and be happy and loving in their life. So I don't get bent out of shape when I think of people not responding to this particular opportunity, because they're responding to something somewhere.
I'll tell you, the only people that I really get sort of, I don't get like personally, emotionally bent out of shape, but I have a policy. If you don't want manure in your face, don't throw it in my direction. And because it's coming back with momentum. And the only ones that I really focus on like that are the status quo defenders. Even in the face of absolute evidence. I mean, look, we have people. I'm an ex-cop. I don't know if you know that.
But,
we've got people on death row with far less evidence against them than the evidence for the existence and reality of UFOs and extraterrestrials. And with a whole, not only less evidence, but less quality in the evidence. And they're on death row. You know, they were sentenced to die for their crime, which was allegedly proven by this evidence, which is far less in quantity and quality than the evidence for the existence and reality of UFOs and extraterrestrials. And so when they get on TV or radio, or they put it in print, and they start talking about how foolish this is, and, you know, well, where's the proof, and then I tend to write articles about that. I tend to call them by name and read what they said on the air, and I tend to then attempt to just disassemble them with the evidence. And that's the only ones that I really sort of focus on, and that's not the general public. That's the general idiots. That are professional skeptics. Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. All right. The telephone number is 602-539-9580. If that's going to cost you long-distance money, use our toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. Of course, you have to dial 1 before either one of those numbers. 888-223-4599. Or you can send me a flash message if you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada. One of the people that is absolutely the best thing that ever happened to the so-called UFO debate is Bill Nye, the science guy. He is so out of touch with reality, so out of touch with the information, gets it wrong so much that he actually helps in confirming what UFO advocates say about the professional skeptics. And so that's one, you know, I'm using his name because he's out there in public, and but he's just an example of what I focus on. On the other hand, there are people like Professor Don Dundary from McGill University, and listen to this. He says, quote, all science, regardless of what science you're in, begins with observable phenomena. He's in the Department of Psychology at McGill. And he's been holding some seminars about UFOs. And he just on Wednesday, last Wednesday, held a seminar called, it was entitled, Evidence, Scientific Reaction, and Popular Culture. And in these, he's presenting evidence from the U.S. Air Force and J. Allen Hynek and lots of other big names. And he has engendered some scientific level discussion on the evidence itself. Now, last Wednesday, when he held this, you would suspect that the room would have been full of people. He had eight. But at least he's doing it. At least he's talking about the evidence, and you know, he's talking about evidence from astronauts and pilots and photographic evidence, and he's talking about it from the standpoint of psychologists doing a scientific investigation of this, and that's a good thing.
I'm glad you mentioned Bill Nye, because it does get to be very entertaining, some of these debunkers, the way they debunk themselves. You might remember he was on a show when Edgar Mitchell was being interviewed, and he was pressing Mitchell hard for physical evidence, and yet when this was Larry King, I hope I can say that, but Larry King asked Bill Nye, well, what do you think about the CIA's explanation of what happened at Roswell? And Bill Nye, without hesitation, he said, oh, that was very logical. So yeah. to take the CIA at its word, but to try to challenge Edgar Mitchell and, you know, discredit him for lack of showing physical evidence, to me, that's just what you said. You know, that helps the whole discussion of this reality of extraterrestrial UFOs and visitors.
Well, and here, too, I mean, this was a reaction that I had personally at the time. I saw that, and I heard that. There's no one in the CIA who produced all that explanation, not a one of them, that's been in space. But Edgar Mitchell has. Okay? So taking their word over someone who's actually been in space, you may as well have, Bill Nye may as well have gone down to McDonald's and interviewed the employees about what they thought happened at Roswell and take their word over Edgar Mitchell. None of them have been in space, but he has. And, you know, this is, it's just, I don't know, he's a comic more than he's a scientist. But he's not the only one. And, you know, there are quite a number of others. One of the things that falls into this category is back when, you remember when the Ministry of Defense in Mexico released that video that was shot by one of their Air Force crews. And this video was taken with the FLIR. That's the forward-looking infrared. So this was all infrared. Now that crew saw nothing except on radar and on infrared. And then here, and I warned everyone, the instant that came out, I warned everyone on this show, you watch the spin. They're going to start saying it was meteors that were breaking up or it was this or that. And the next day on the news here in the United States, you had one of the major media outlets with one of their anchors saying that a Mexican Air Force crew thinks that bright, fast-moving lights around their craft may have been UFOs. Well, there were no bright lights around their craft. There was nothing that you could see. It was only because they shot the video with infrared that you can see anything at all. But that's what they do. They put that spin on, and then there was some guy with a PhD that came out, you know, and said, well, they, you know, it was probably a meteor that broke up and they were seeing pieces of it. They didn't see anything. That's the point. The big mystery for them was it's on radar, and they were looking for drug runners. This thing's on radar. They can't see it with their eyes, but there it is on radar. So they turn the FLIR on, and there's 11 of them. But they saw nothing with their eyes. This is the kind of nonsense that we get fed all the time, and nobody ever calls their hand on this. Well, I do, and maybe one or two other shows, maybe some more shows, I don't know. But no one else out there in the media is saying, hang on here, news anchor. You're wrong. Nobody. And they get away with it.
Well, it's true, and we can all, you know, what you're doing is a great service, and a lot of other people with these kind of shows are just, it's just seeping in, and more people are hearing it, and more people are ready to hear it. And, you know, one of my favorite websites goes quite deeply into all this public relations spin, whether it's about, you know, poison raisins in California, or the chlorine industry, or, you know, the Iraq, the first Persian Gulf War, and how they staged a congressional hearing to get us all rallied around, you know, entering into that war. And the campaigns, these PR campaigns, are very, very sophisticated. And, you know, this guy that wrote a book about raisins, all the poisons on raisins in California, he found himself with a person that was, and then he went to do a book tour, and somebody was calling up all the places where his book tour was scheduled, pretending to be his representative and canceling the lectures in advance. Now, if that's what's going to happen just over raisins, you can imagine when this whole reality of extraterrestrial civilizations and their presence here and our relationship to that and how that might affect the fossil fuel industry, the weapons industry, financial industry, all these things, there's going to be a very massive, very sophisticated PR campaign to try to discredit individuals, organizations, entire movements, and it's been going on for a while. But, you know, I think that it's on the decline because consciousness is rising in the world. People are, you know, kind of, I think, regaining their power more than before, I hope. You know, and then different things like these ballot initiatives and what your show is doing, and the truth is rising. Truth is rising. I'm confident of that. And then again, at some point, it'll be a critical mass, and all these people that have been trying to squash the truth will just see the inevitability of it getting out into the light. And then what do they do?
Well, yes, I agree with everything you said. I think there is going to be, I think it's already underway, but there is going to be a big noticeable shift in the major media and how they treat this subject. But it's going to be not because of enlightenment or revelation that dawns upon them, other than the dawning of the revelation that their income is way down. One major mass media outlet had a 52% decrease in their radio news income last year, 52%. And that's because their numbers are in the basement, and that's because they keep insulting the intelligence of the public. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach here, and that means that we only have just a few minutes left in this evening's show. We have time for one more telephone call, maybe two. Jeff, in these final moments of the show, let me ask you this. If this ballot initiative will come up for vote when? October, November?
Well, we would target the November election this time.
Okay. And what has to happen in order for that to be on the ballot?
I have to resubmit it and go through a couple procedural things and then collect about 4,000 signatures to put it on the ballot during the coming 4 months.
Okay. Do you suspect that you're going to have any problem whatsoever in collecting the 4,000 signatures?
Well, it's always a challenge, but, you know, we'll just try to do what we can.
All right. So let's assume that you get the 4,000, it's on the ballot, and it passes. How long would it be before this commission actually exists?
I think it's stated that it has to be formed within 30 days. Of passing.
All right. What if you don't have enough people that apply to be on that commission?
There's already enough. I sent out a word to some people before, and they're already prepared to do it. I already got 9 responses from some very good people last year.
So 30 days after the election, provided it passes, we would expect to see this commission formed. We'd know who's going to be on the commission. Now, how would they be required to meet together, or would they meet online, on the internet? I mean, what's the order of business for them? What are they going to actually do then?
They will meet, I'd have to read through the details of this again, but at least quarterly, and make quarterly reports, and then they would just, they have a lot of flexibility in establishing rules as far as how often they meet and where and how people connect. It could be by phone, by internet. It's kind of unbounded in that sense.
Would they be required to hold any kind of public hearings?
I think that says they have at least 1 or 2 public hearings a year, and more if they choose.
Okay, so they could just decide that they're going to have a public hearing and do one.
Right.
Okay.
There's already one that there's at least one per year, I think, that they're supposed to do, and they can have more if they want.
All right. Now, in these public hearings, what would they be asking people to testify about having seen UFOs or having been contacted by extraterrestrials? What would they be doing in these hearings?
Well, a lot of that has been left up to their discretion, because to put too many details into this ballot initiative, then the default vote for people will be, there's too many details in here. I don't know what to decide, so I'll vote no.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to keep it simple, give them, trust in their discretion that they'll just make good choices in how often to vote and how much information, or how often to meet, how much information to get to the public through public hearings or through postings on the internet or whatever.
Will they be required to produce white papers, reports?
Quarterly reports just on their success in complying with the requirements of the initiative, of the ordinance.
Mm-hmm. And then are those to be published, in the newspapers? Or how will the public know about these reports?
At least on the website. And if I've overlooked that point, then it's something that can be changed before we resubmit it.
All right, and what about missionary work? And what I mean by that is, provided this passes, do you have plans to assist in organizing the same sort of initiatives around the country and other places?
Well, I could certainly serve as a resource, which I'm doing right now for 3 other major cities that are contemplating doing a very similar initiative during this year as well.
What would be the... Let's say that I'm in the Phoenix area, and you guys are successful over there, and so I decide, okay, we need that over here in Phoenix. What would be the first step that I would have to take?
I would say, send me an email, because that is one of the cities that's already contemplating this. People can go to my website, extracampaign.org, and just push the button, how to start a ballot initiative.
Okay.
That would be the first step. They can also push a button, how to get paid writing articles for examiner.com, so that they can be the media support for the initiative. And that's happening now, too, that there's just a lot of those being recruited, and day by day, more people are writing articles about this topic through that medium. So, yeah, Phoenix is the perfect place to do this. In fact, that one may take the lead, just because there have been so many witnesses to the Phoenix Lights.
Well, they certainly have, I've spoken with people, even some military people off the record, who just chuckle at the whole explanation that was flares. And I had one of them explain to me technically why you can look at that and see that it isn't flares, although I can't reveal who it was and wouldn't. It was good, useful information. A lot of times the military people who see these things really blow away the spin doctor's stories. What would be the what would be the value of, say, 30 of these springing up around the country?
Huge. Huge. It would never be the same. The discussion would just never go back to the kind of media spin and denial, because too much information would get out.
Do you foresee this thing taking that that sort of pattern? Do you see it breaking out kind of like a wildfire once the first one happens?
Yes, I do. Just like the again, the nuclear freeze initiatives back in the early 80s went from one in Santa Clara to a couple of hundred around the country in 2 years. And Phoenix is the perfect place for this. I can put you in touch personally with the people that are already exploring that. There's a couple other major cities as well. And then it's just, you know, it's definitely a genuinely grassroots kind of effort. There are too many details at the local level to coordinate from a national level anyway, and that's better because it'll be person to person, neighbor to neighbor, that this will happen. It'll be really fabulous.
All right. Jeff, we're fast approaching the brick wall at the end of the show. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us this evening and to talk with me, talk with the audience, and share sort of the inside information on this. I appreciate you being here. It's been fascinating.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate the caller's questions and your diligence in just keeping focused on this very important issue.
All right. If you will, just stay on the line with me. I'd like to speak to you for just a moment at the end of the show. And, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Jeff Peckman. If you go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click on his picture, then it'll take you right to his website. Very interesting approach to this whole issue of disclosure, really. And who knows? This thing may take off and go like a wildfire. Other initiatives have. But we'll have to see, and we will see, as the November election in Denver approaches. Tomorrow, my guest is going to be Lloyd Auerbach, and we're going to be talking about some rather deep paranormal issues. My friends call me Steeleye, and my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.